Hi, this is Francesca Rhiannon, and this is a Writer's Voice web-only extra in our series, What You Need to Know. Joe Biden has just come out with a $2 trillion climate proposal that climate activists say goes in the right direction, but isn't enough. In particular, they call out the lack of a ban on fracking in the plan. But there is a plan currently in the U.S. House of Representatives that would plug that hole. H.R. 5857, the Fracking Ban Act. It was introduced by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York, in February. To find out more about the Fracking Ban Act and the reasons for it, I called up Jim Walsh, Senior Energy Policy Analyst for Food and Water Watch. He provides policy guidance and support to local, state, and national policy campaigns that help to ensure a just transition to 100% renewable energy by 2035.
The Fracking Ban Act is an important piece of legislation that actually seeks to address a major gaping hole in the national energy and climate discussion that's going on in Congress and largely across the country. And where states like New York have taken steps to ban fracking, nationally, the larger policies that are being put forward by the Energy and Commerce Committee, the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis, as well as presidential candidate Joe Biden's plan for climate, all largely ignore the supply side of fossil fuels. And this is really critical because we know that if we don't stop the development of fossil fuels, we are going to continue to see the climate crisis being moved forward. And so where we're seeing plans being put forward to develop clean renewable energy and the prices on clean energy moving forward, that is actually increasing the amount of renewables in the grid, we're actually seeing the amount of gas growing even more significantly. And so if you look at over the last 20 years, coal has declined by about 22%. Over that same period of time, gas has actually increased by 15%, whereas solar and wind have only gone up by a combined 6 to 7%. And so we know that simply transitioning to clean renewable energy will not actually result in elimination of gas. But worse yet, the plans being put forward aren't actually advocating for clean renewable energy. What they're advocating for are policies that will use terms like carbon neutral. And these sorts of policies put a lot of false energy and climate solutions on the table that would compete directly with solar and wind. And so those are aspects like biofuels that come from, particularly from factory farms, where they're actually capturing methane in digesters. And then what's happening in many states in the Northeast, particularly with the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, is that those factory farms are actually able to get subsidies because utilities pay them for capturing that methane as a climate benefit. But then the utilities that are paying them for that benefit can actually use the credit that they get for purchasing the essential reductions in CO2 to continue increasing pollution in the atmosphere rather than actually reducing their own emissions. And so these plans are actually not only not addressing the supply side, but are actually doing things that will allow more dirty energy to be included in our generation system for our electricity, which is very concerning.
Actually terrifying. There was a report very recently in the last couple of days saying that methane emissions have increased quite a bit. And methane is short-term, but a much more potent greenhouse gas, even than carbon dioxide. This bill would phrase out fracking, hydraulic fracking for oil and natural gas. What does it say about pipelines that right now are being built? Even, in New York State, there are fights happening right now to try to stop the building of pipelines. I mean, even if New York State itself has banned fracking.
Exactly. And so that's the continued build out of gas infrastructure, even in places where we're saying that we aren't going to do fracking or we're increasing clean energy commitments We're continuing to see this gas infrastructure being built. And what this is being driven, and it's not just pipelines, but it's also power plants. And this, the Fracking Ban Act would actually prohibit new fracked gas pipelines and power plants from being built to ensure that those entities are not taking place in our energy system. And, you know, you look at states like New York, the policies that exist there are still leaving the door open for dirty power and pipelines, even with these clean energy standards. And if you look, the Dan Shenker power plant now is pushing for an expansion of their power plants. And they're actually greenwashing themselves by essentially putting forward a program that says that they will actually reduce greenhouse gas emissions by increasing the amount of gas that's actually there. And they do this through a really convoluted way of saying that by using renewable natural gas and relying on this dirty energy source from factory farms, they'll actually reduce the carbon footprint. This is a really big problem in general because, one, it supports the development of these factory farms and dirty energy systems that are being built out from these factory farms to create new revenue streams for waste, but it also continues to allow for gas plants to be built. And those gas plants aren't just releasing CO2 in the atmosphere, which is warming our planet, but it's also releasing particulate matter, PM2.5, ozone precursors. These are things that literally kill people and make people sick. And so transitioning our energy system in a way that will support a true, just, and equitable transition will not be one that continues to burden our communities with air pollution as we're transitioning to clean energy. So when lawmakers and Congress and elsewhere are talking about these clean energy plans, the fact that they're neutral on the generation source is really problematic. And the fact that they don't actually address the fossil fuel infrastructure is equally problematic, because when you look also beyond the pipelines, the fossil fuel industry is working to build out petrochemical infrastructure that will increase our plastics. They are working to build out infrastructure to expand into global markets to increase the amount of methane that they're selling into global markets. So this is the industry's hedge that is set up to make sure that they can continue to profit and continue to move forward with business as usual, even if we move forward with a plan to achieve clean renewable energy 100% from the sun and wind sources. And so this really is one of the reasons the Fracking Ban Act is really important, because none of the major policy recommendations in Congress right now are actually looking at how do we address the development of gas infrastructure and the impacts it's having on communities. And, you know, in states like New York, where you've banned fracking, that was largely done because people recognize the direct impact it has on drinking water, on local air quality, and other impacts. There's been numerous studies that document the proximity to fracking wells and lower birth rate and infant mortality rates increasing due to proximity of fracking wells. And so we know that these facilities from start to finish are causing significant public health concerns, but we are not developing an energy plan that will actually phase these things out and phase out things like fracking, but actually developing an energy plan that may very well institutionalize fracking into our clean energy system. And so, and I use quote fingers for clean energy in that manner, because we all know that fracking gas is not clean, but the industry continues to claim that it is.
And on that, New York has passed what has been touted as the most forward-thinking and radical clean energy plan in the country, if not the world, the New York Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. I was listening in as an audience member to the second meeting of the New York Climate Action Council, which has been tasked to implement this act, and I was shocked, actually, to hear there was so much discussion about using renewable natural gas. It was really being pushed as a major part of this legislation, which seems to completely undermine it, according to what you've just told us. I wonder if you could talk about why is this being talked about in this way in New York, and would this ban help to change that?
So the renewable natural gas that is being built out is largely being pushed by large utilities, fossil fuel interests, and factory farms. And these entities are pushing the development of renewable natural gas because it will allow them to continue profiting off of unsustainable practices that they're doing. The utilities and fossil fuels use this as a way to greenwash their dirty energy, and factory farms are greenwashing themselves as climate champions. The reality is factory farms contribute significant amounts of methane to the atmosphere. And simply capturing that methane coming from animal waste is only actually addressing about half of the methane emissions that are coming out of factory farms. The rest of the emissions that aren't captured at all are coming from enteric emissions, which are essentially cow burps. And this requires expensive infrastructure that is significantly more expensive than clean, renewable energy. And that's where these carbon trading programs and other things through the utilities purchasing the credits from these reductions in methane emissions are actually helping the factory farms to profit, but also creating a space where they can claim that they're actually helping to address the climate crisis while building out more fracked gas infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so renewable natural gas is really an industry-driven campaign to hide the problems associated with continuing to build gas power plants, to continue to frack, and continue to build out factory farm infrastructure. And when we think about, you know, how this fits into the Fracking Ban Act, the Fracking Ban Act doesn't specifically deal with the development of these factory farms. But if we stop building out more gas plants, we stop building out this infrastructure, those entities won't be pushed there anymore to push this false narrative, to try to convince policymakers and the public that in some way, facilitating more development of factory farms and more development of fracking and gas power plants is actually good for the planet. It's an absurd claim that building more fracked gas infrastructure is going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by increasing the amount of renewable natural gas in the mixture. It's this dirty energy source. It's going to incentivize the expansion of factory farms. It's going to monetize animal waste. And that actually means with more factory farming means more water and air pollution affecting communities near those sites. And it also has the same exact problems that gas has in terms of the transportation. It gets transported in pipelines. Those pipelines leak. We know that leaking pipelines are a significant source of methane emissions. And we know that burning this gas from these factory farms as well as these power plants creates the particulate matter and the ozone precursors that is making people sick and killing people in this country.
We learned today that President Trump has just issued an executive order that will cut the NEPA. He's basically undone the National Environmental Priorities Act, and thereby trying to clear the way for, I guess, no longer doing environmental reviews. It will enable gas fracking infrastructure pipelines to be fast-tracked. I wonder if you could comment on this move, and do you think it's going to be able to go forward?
I think this is going to blow up in the Trump administration's face. What they've done through the NEPA regulations are not in line with the stated law. And it was really created to prevent environmental problems from being dealt with when they become crises. And so NEPA, it actually requires that projects with significant environmental impact will have to be reviewed to understand what that impact is before those programs are put forward so that we can have a full picture of what our impacts on the environment will be from these projects prior to building them and policymakers making decisions on them. And so on its face, the rollback in NEPA regulations are an attempt by the Trump administration to further undermine environmental protections, to give handouts to oil and gas drillers and pipeline builders and other entities that are struggling right now, mostly not because of the pandemic, but the pandemic has actually shed a light on some of the problems that we're seeing in the oil and gas sector. But the financial woes of the oil and gas sector have been going on for a long time. And it's mostly because if you look at the fracking industry and how they're financed, it's largely done through acquiring debt to drill wells and then pay back investors in order to buy more debt or to get more debt to drill more wells, to get more debt to drill more wells. And this creates this pressure to have ever expanding markets for gas because they need to keep going to new wells to be able to pay back the investors. So the financial problems the industries have has resulted in billions of dollars flowing to the industry from resources that were allocated to help with the COVID-19 pandemic and bailing out an industry that was going to be underwater anyways and facing significant financial hurdles because of their faulty business model. And so I think that when we think about the NEPA rollbacks, you know, we're looking at a COVID-19 crisis that threatens our health and communities around the United States, and particularly low-income communities and communities of color. And by rolling back these NEPA regulations, it is a direct assault on communities that have been overburdened with pollution for generations. And it will ensure that we will fast track more projects if it's allowed to go forward. I think that there will be significant legal challenges that occur that prevent this rule from being implemented, but it is in line with the Trump administration's efforts to do everything they can to roll out the red carpet, to facilitate more fracking, more pipelines, more power plants, more climate destructing greenhouse gases with that impact not just our climate, but the health and well-being of our communities.
Recently, there was a ruling on the Dakota Access Pipeline where a judge ruled that it needed to shut down now. The oil needed to be drained out of it prior to doing a real environmental review. The company has decided to flout that legal ruling. And I guess my question is can they do that? And the second question is, how can they be stopped from doing that?
So the Dakota Access Pipeline would transfer some of the dirtiest fossil fuels that we have in the country and creates a pipeline to transfer those fossil fuels to refineries in the South. And when we look at that project, and the judges rightly said this did not take steps to protect public health. It did not take steps to evaluate whether or not the environment was going to be impacted by this and do the thorough NEPA analysis that needs to be done. So we have gotten to this point because of a combined effort of grassroots organizing and mobilizing, as well as legal strategy and policy strategy that has helped to slow the development of this pipeline. And now has actually put forward plans that the pipeline actually has to stop the oil from flowing through it. And what's actually interesting about this is the first time I know of where a pipeline that has already been built has been ordered to actually stop sending fossil fuels through the pipeline. And this is really significant because a lot of the development of pipelines we've seen in the country where there have been legal challenges and other reviews, particularly with gas pipelines, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has essentially delayed challenges to these pipelines while they continue to be constructed, at which time the construction gets completed and the pipeline's flowing and all of the other concerns that were being raised were essentially brushed off. And the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and other entities have failed to actually come back and retroactively enforce those rules. We're seeing a judge now stepping up to do that. Companies feel like they can flout the orders of judges and decide to continue to send gas and oil and tar sands through pipelines. It's up to the administration to enforce those orders. And if the administration doesn't enforce those orders, it's going to take continued efforts to not just build that grassroots support, but to bring the legal challenges to ensure the Trump administration enforces those orders and does so quickly. The grassroots pressure can also help to enforce those orders because the politicians will feel like they need to speak out against this and create more of a buzz against this and potentially move the administration to actually enforce the laws and the orders of the judges. Now, as this goes forward, there will be appeals that move forward with this. And so it will be you know, where the Dakota Access and Energy Transfer Partners, owners of the pipeline, are saying that this is an example of judicial overreach. What we're seeing with this pipeline, it's an overreach of an industry that continues to threaten public health and our environment in blind pursuit of profits.
And finally, it just seems like for everything that you've been saying, that it's kind of a whack-a-mole situation. You get a law passed, it gets flouted, you have to go back to court. You pass a groundbreaking clean energy bill and dirty energy inserts itself in it like a Trojan horse. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement says we need systemic change. What would systemic change look like when we're talking about the transition to a just transition to clean energy?
So a just transition and an equitable transition means that we are making this transition happen in a way that ensures that the communities that are currently dependent on fossil fuels are made whole, and the workers who are in that industry are made whole, and that the communities that are bearing a disproportional impact of the pollution from these industries are no longer forced to bear that impact. And we have the ability to do that now. We have the technological capacity to build a energy system that relies 100% on solar, wind, tidal, and geothermal sources. This is without any of the factory farm gas, without any of the fracked gas, and we can start building that today. We have the capacity and the technological ability to do this in the next 10 years. But what we don't really have right now is the political will to make that plan move forward. And this political will is continuing to grow. We're starting to see that political will move forward, where programs like the Green New Deal are talking about big picture, major transformations. The plan that former Vice President Biden put forward, as well as the plan put together by the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis, are certainly better than the plans that were put forward a few years ago and backed by these same entities and same elected officials. But they still don't go far enough. They continue to rely on false solutions that will encourage factory farming. They rely on programs like carbon capture sequestration, whereby a gas plant or a coal plant can extend its life by essentially adding extra infrastructure that will capture that CO2 and then sequester it. But the reality is where that CO2 is actually being sequestered right now, the major market for that is an enhanced oil recovery, which is a process where the oil industry actually takes the CO2 and pumps it into the earth to extract every last little bit of oil that's in the earth. You know, so this is really a backwards energy plan. The plan that we need will seek to stop practices like enhanced oil recovery and fracking and oil and gas development, and seek to really, truly, rapidly move our electricity system to 100% clean renewable energy. It will focus on building a transportation infrastructure that is focused on not on just building out that everybody has an electric car, but focusing on electrifying our public transportation sector by also ensuring that we have increased access to more sustainable communities that prioritize transportation through biking and walking. We need programs to support the development of teleworking. We've seen now through COVID-19 that we can make these big transitions as a society and handle them in a very quick manner. We have not done that with the climate crisis. The climate crisis has been festering for decades, and we've known it's a problem, and we're still sitting here with half solutions that are being put forward by policy leaders in Washington, D.C., that leave the door open for these false solutions. So we need to build that renewable energy infrastructure, we need to stop fossil fuels, and we need to stop the development of these false solutions in our energy system to ensure that public health, the environment, and a sustainable climate are actually at the front and center of our energy plan, and make sure that these jobs are created, are going to they're actually good union-paying jobs, where workers can actually have access to benefits and make sure that workers get access to decent wages. and can collectively bargain for those wages and benefits. We need to make sure that the communities that are that have been disproportionately impacted by these pollution, which tend to be communities of color, Black communities, immigrant communities, are no longer forced to deal with those burdens of pollution by shutting down these power plants as quickly as possible and replacing them with clean, renewable energy. We also need to make sure that our climate and energy plan doesn't allow these sideline processes to go forward, such as the development of petrochemical infrastructure. There's a plan right now being put forward by the petrochemical industry to actually develop a massive build-out of petrochemical infrastructure in Appalachia. And that petrochemical infrastructure, they're looking for over $1 billion in federal loan guarantees to support the development of these projects because they are having trouble getting private investors to put money into these projects. And so they're turning now to get subsidies through the federal government to actually support the development of these projects so that if these projects go belly up, the U.S. taxpayers are on the hook and the investors that put money into these programs are actually made whole. And so those sorts of loan guarantees and those sorts of resources that are being put forward need to be invested in actually building the clean energy infrastructure we need, not subsidizing plastic development and other dirty energy infrastructure that the industry is seeking to put forward.
America's small businesses, including renewable energy companies, are facing hardship because of a dramatic, unexpected loss of business due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's come to light that the Trump administration has pushed to allow billions in CARES Act funds to pay off the debt of the fossil fuel industry, debt incurred way before the current pandemic. Jim Walsh told me about an effort underway in Congress to keep the Trump administration from using the CARES Act to transfer enormous amounts of wealth from taxpayers to oil companies.
You know, something that you may want to put on your radar screen is it looks like the Senate is going to be putting together a new COVID-19 package, and that could move forward before the August recess. And we've been working really closely with a number of allies and organizations, as well as members of Congress, to move forward a policy called the Rewind Act. The Rewind Act actually, so what we're seeing happen is the CARES Act funding, which is the coronavirus, the first, you know, package that came out, the $2 trillion package that Congress moved. And what we're seeing is the Fed and Treasury are actually diverting billions of dollars to the fossil fuel industry. But then the Trump administration is doing other things like regulatory rollbacks, like the NEPA rollbacks. They're also doing things to reduce royalties on federal lands, and even looking to expand purchases to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, all as ways to provide resources and support to the fossil fuel industry. And at a time when nurses and doctors don't have access to protective equipment, and millions of people are facing unemployment in the country, the last thing we should be doing is providing bailouts to dirty, polluting industry that's creating an existential threat to our country and our world. But the Trump administration is literally hell-bent on providing these subsidies and jumping through hoops to support this industry. And we're working with groups and organizations to work to make sure that the Rewind Act is actually passed as part of this next coronavirus recovery package. And that will stop the Trump administration's attempt to support the fossil fuel industry by prohibiting the Fed and Treasury from actually providing resources to fossil fuel companies. It will stop the regulatory rollbacks from going forward that the Trump administration is proposing, and stop the reductions in royalty payments that the oil and gas industry is required to make for the resources they take from federal land.
America's small businesses, including renewable energy companies, are facing hardship because of a dramatic, unexpected loss of business due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's come to light that the Trump administration has pushed to allow billions in CARES Act funds to pay off the debt of the fossil fuel industry, debt incurred way before the current pandemic. Jim Walsh told me about an effort underway in Congress to keep the Trump administration from using the CARES Act to transfer enormous amounts of wealth from taxpayers to oil companies.
You know, something that you may want to put on your radar screen is it looks like the Senate is going to be putting together a new COVID-19 package, and that could move forward before the August recess. And we've been working really closely with a number of allies and organizations, as well as members of Congress, to move forward a policy called the Rewind Act. The Rewind Act actually, so what we're seeing happen is the CARES Act funding, which is the coronavirus, the first, you know, package that came out, the $2 trillion package that Congress moved. And what we're seeing is the Fed and Treasury are actually diverting billions of dollars to the fossil fuel industry. But then the Trump administration is doing other things like regulatory rollbacks, like the NEPA rollbacks. They're also doing things to reduce royalties on federal lands, and even looking to expand purchases to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, all as ways to provide resources and support to the fossil fuel industry. And at a time when nurses and doctors don't have access to protective equipment, and millions of people are facing unemployment in the country, the last thing we should be doing is providing bailouts to dirty, polluting industry that's creating an existential threat to our country and our world. But the Trump administration is literally hell-bent on providing these subsidies and jumping through hoops to support this industry. And we're working with groups and organizations to work to make sure that the Rewind Act is actually passed as part of this next coronavirus recovery package. And that will stop the Trump administration's attempt to support the fossil fuel industry by prohibiting the Fed and Treasury from actually providing resources to fossil fuel companies. It will stop the regulatory rollbacks from going forward that the Trump administration is proposing, and stop the reductions in royalty payments that the oil and gas industry is required to make for the resources they take from federal land.
Well, Jim Walsh, this has just been such an interesting and informative conversation. You are the Senior Energy Policy Analyst for Food and Water Watch. Thank you so much for this conversation and for the work you do.
Oh, thank you so much for taking time to cover these important issues, and I look forward to talking to you soon.